Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I'm going to start it off this time.
You did.
Because you normally start it off. So yeah. Number 10. Number 10 podcast. Welcome. I'm Emily Wolf, and this is CC Thornley.
Hello, everybody. I play the banjo.
He does. And that's all he does now.
I do other basic regular human things as you well, do. But the banjo is probably one of the best things I do.
It is. It's beautiful. So this is it. This is our number 10th.
Our number 10th.
Yeah, we've had a long day.
See how difficult it is opening up the podcast and doing the intro?
It is. Yeah. I'm doing all right.
You're doing well. Yeah, until you did that 10th thing. That was ridiculous. So, yes, correct. This is the end of the road, folks. Yeah.
Well done for listening through 9 of our episodes and got to this one and thought, how could it get any better? Well, it is.
Well, you know, it's going to be moderately. I guess it's all subjective, really. But so we've got a very special episode for our very last one of season one. And what we're going to do is have a bit of a look back because we've been punching out those tunes at you 5 every podcast. And maybe you haven't had time to really sit and digest and sort them all out. So today we're going to go back and look over the past 9 episodes and we're going to play a song from every episode. And then we're going to add in another song that we just like at the end to make it a nice round 10. So you're going to get 10 songs out of this for nothing.
That's right. We just upped one a notch for your excitement in this podcast. So less talking, more tunes.
All right. So before we get into it, though, this is the last one. The Tasmanian Heritage Fiddle Ensemble in Hobart is starting up again. It'll be starting up again on February the 10th. So if you're interested in attending that or knowing more about it, you can look us up on Facebook. Or you can go to the website, thfe.org.au, and you can message us directly there and find out what the deal is if you want to come down and have a bit of a play on your instrument. We do basically the music we're showing at you now, Tasmanian heritage music.
Yeah, and with a couple of imports from other parts of the world. But, mainly all Tassie tunes, and we provide tuition as well, so... Mm. It's a nice learning environment if you're a beginner or even if you've been playing for a while and you just want to come and, it's a really good way to build up your playing skills to play in a group if you don't often play with a group of people. And so it's really good.
It is a very accommodating and fun, friendly group. This year it was.
We haven't seen them over the summer holidays, so I don't know.
They might have changed.
They might have changed. They could have grown up.
They might have, but the point is that I'm trying to make is it's always lovely. It's always supportive.
Well, we're there, and that means it's always lovely. Well, I'm there, so therefore it's lovely.
It's all right. Yeah, it's a girl up the front anyway. That's lovelier than...
Just had to pull the gender card, didn't you?
Yeah. I pulled the Queen of Hearts, ladies and gentlemen. So, 10 songs. We better get cracking. I don't know what to tell you about gigs. You can just check out if you go to ccthornley.com, there's a gig guide in the back there. It shows all the gigs that I play in, which will include Black Swans of Trespass, Wolf and Thorn, and Heritage Fiddle gigs.
Yep.
If you want to know just about the Heritage Fiddles, then you can go to that website.
We do have things in the pipeline, so we can't give the dates yet because they're not – official yet, but we do have some things coming up at some folk clubs, so keep an eye out for them. So Wolf and Thorn will definitely be making an appearance at that. Actually, I can say the Franklin Folk Club on the 20th of February, Wolf and Thorn will be playing. That's our next one, our duo, and then possibly, at the Fern Tree Folk Club as well.
Which is the Kunanyi Folk Club, and Kunanyi is the Palawa word for Mount Wellington, which is the big mountain we have at the back of Hobart.
In case you missed it.
Yeah. And, so that's the Palawa crew there. It's not the Palawa crew, but the Palawa language that originally named the mountain, which apparently wasn't good enough for the English people who wanted to just have all the – they have like about, I think, 20 names. They just recycle. It's Boggy Creek, Campbell, he was a bit Campbelltown, Campbellfield, a lot of Campbells, whereas they had these wonderful, varied and diverse Aboriginal names. The English settlers looked at them and decided it wasn't good enough.
Well, at least we've got that.
That's what Australia Day is all about, folks.
We can't. We're not going to go back into that again.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get cracking with this and we'll give you some more.
Let's just play some tunes. Let's put some positive vibes out there. That's some tunes.
Yes. Isn't it funny how our national, our contrived national day just makes us so messed up?
Yeah. Mm. I've only just come out of it, so.
Yeah. So, look, the first song we're going to play was one that was featured in episode one, and it's one of my personal favourites. I really enjoy this tune. It's just a rollicking good tune. It's called the Cape Barren Jig, but it's also known as the Little Burnt Potato. And this tune comes from the Flinders Island people, and it was part of the Indigenous string groups up there. And this was a big one for them to play, and it's from that collection of tune. I think it was tunes, the Brown Brothers or something.
Mm-hmm, I think. I'm not too sure, but.
But anyway, you'll like the tune. I think I start this one, yeah?
You do. It's all on you.
All right, here we go. You ready? There it was, a couple of rounds through on the old Cape Barren jig from the episode one of the season one podcast that we did there. And, yeah, if you heard that one, that was from the Flinders Island crew up there, the Indigenous people of Tasmania from their string bands. So we do love playing that tune.
It's a beautiful tune.
I love it. It's so rollicking.
Yeah, you know. It's a great tune.
Anyway, the next tune we're going to play for you, they're going to come hard and fast today, folks. The next tune we're going to play is, this was from episode two, and this was, I can just edit that out.
Yeah, sorry.
This tune was written by Max Webb. Max Webb, he was active around the 60s, 70s, 80s, I think, and he was a bagpipe player, very much into his horns and so on and so forth, and his pipes. He actually, I think, founded the Derwent Valley Pipe Band.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a tune that he wrote called The Joys of Piping that is pretty much a piping tune. But when you hear it translated to other instruments, it takes on another life of its own. But this is one I really enjoy playing. And quite often, there are some big names. Well, I say big, they're relatively big. There are some relatively bigger names in the canon of Tasmanian folk music. Max Webb is a big name, but he often gets overlooked. So I really enjoy coming back to his tunes.
He's written some really lovely tunes. Mm.
So, Joys of Piping?
The Joys of Piping.
How do we start this?
I think I started.
Very good.
Yep. Thank you.
Joys of Piping by Max Webb, if you can imagine that, with the full bagpipe section and kilts and sporrans flying everywhere. That's that tune. I'm not sure when that was written, but it would have been mid-20th century.
Yeah, I don't know with that one.
Anyway, so that was from season two. This is season one. We haven't done season two yet. That was from episode two, season one.
Then we're going to go into one from episode three, and this is by one of my favourite composers, is Paddy Riley. So this is her tune, the Glen Huon Waltz. This was one of the first tunes she wrote. Actually, it was the first tune she wrote, and it was to help with, you know, she wanted to be able to read music better, and so she wrote a tune to be able to do that. And it's about, she wrote this tune like 14 years ago, so it's not that old.
No.
But it's a really pretty tune.
And still warm. You can feel it.
And she wrote it when she used to live in Glen Huon, hence the name Glen Huon Waltz. So that's what we kind of do for
you. Why do you like, why is Paddy Riley your favourite composer?
Well, she's written really, I just like her melodic phrases and how they resolve. I just really find them quite pretty, particularly with her definition between the first and second half of her tunes. I really like that, particularly in another tune of hers, For Dora's Dilemma. I just really like the raucous, no, it's such a raucous tune to play, but it's really fun. I think she's got a really nice knack of composing really singful melodies.
Singful?
I find them. I don't know. They're just quite, they get stuck in your head. I think if you get an earworm with a tune in your head, which is mainly Paddy's tunes, it's like, well, it's a, you know.
It's sing, we call that quality singful.
I don't know, singful.
Is that a word?
Don't make fun of me.
No, it's a, it's
a lyrical.
It's perfectly cromulent. So anyway, it's the last chance. It's the end of the season. I've got to get my arguments out. I've got to, you know, just letting off some steam here.
Yeah, beating you are, the but
hell
yeah.
out of each other. Glen Huon Waltz. Well, shall we play it?
I think so.
Oh, I should say that we're recording an album. And this is going to be on the album.
Yes.
And if you actually go back to season three, God damn it. If you actually go back to episode three, I made a promise that I will not repeat on this episode. But the promise I made then was that if I messed up the tune, we would give you a sneak preview of the studio version of this tune. And as it happens, I messed it up. So we did add that. So episode three has six tunes, and the last tune is the studio version of Glen Huon Waltz that will be on the new album.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's do it now.
Very good.
Nice.
Thanks. Couple of little hiccups in there. Did you notice at the end I played a Mixolydian D instead of a major? Idiot.
It was fine. It was really nice. Mm. I haven't played that for a while, so I was like, go us.
Mixolydian D. For those at home, a Mixolydian D. I'm going to give them the information.
Fine, all right.
This is what the podcast's about.
Okay. Tell them.
It's not just about us being magnificent. It's about us telling you the information you need to know as a musician. So a Mixolydian D simply means that the last note of the scale, the seventh, I've played flat instead of normal, where it should have been. So in other words, I went like this. Instead of going it should have been that noise. That's all. That's all. That was
unbelievable.
That was worth 20 points I lost there.
Yeah, it was. Team. I'm in the lead, as always.
Goodbye, HD.
All right. On to the next tune from our episode 4. Do you remember the story with this one?
I certainly do.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about it?
This is called Whipsnake in the Pocket, and it's based on a story. It's by Steve Gadd. And it's based on a tale that happened down in Franklin in the 80s, where a young fella was gardening, and he found under a rock a tiny little whip snake. They're these snakes we have in Tassie. Now, they're not venomous as such. Well, they do have a lot of venom in them, but their mouths are very small. And this guy thought it would be a great lark if he stuffed this whip snake in his pocket and went off to the pub. It was middle of winter, so the snake was under the rock hibernating. He gets into the pub and he's pulling it out and he's pouring beer down its gullet and they're having a great lark and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, while the snake is in his lovely warm breast pocket, the snake's getting warmer and warmer and it's waking up. Anyway, the bloke had his beers, had his fun, went home, and later that night his mates found him in someone's front yard, passed out and frothing at the mouth. Turns out he'd gotten so drunk he didn't realise that this little whip snake was biting the crap out of his little finger. Every time he put it there, he's full of whip snake venom. Serves you right.
Yeah.
Mean old bugger.
Yeah.
So that's the story behind Whip Snake in the Pocket, but it's a cracking little tune and I really enjoy it.
This, we're going to play it for you now.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Jaunty little number?
Yes.
That was Steve Gadd's Whip Snake in My Pocket from episode 4. Episode 4? Episode 4.
Yes, you are correct.
Thank you very much.
Episode 4. Now we're going to go into episode 5.
This is episode 5.
That comes after 4.
It does. The numerological order of the pop was specifically designed into our podcast.
Just here to help you through this time.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with the Arabic alphanumerical system, it'll be a breeze for you to look at our podcast. It'll be really easy.
No confusions for you, but we have to be really clear for us here.
We have to write it down. A big 4, get out the texture.
Yeah, there's a really good, a big marker just for you.
Mm-hmm. Spend, what comes after 4?
1, 2, 3, 4.
One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two. What comes after four?
We only play in 4/4, so we can't really go after that.
There's no five.
Anyway.
This tune is called the Irish Cakewalk, and it comes from Tasmania. It comes from the who was it from? The McCoys? No.
Dawson?
The Dawsons down in Huon, who are a family of folk musicians down there. Used to play at all the Appleshed dances and so on and so forth. This song is not Irish, nor is it a cakewalk. But why is it called the Irish Cakewalk? It's called the Irish Cakewalk because the Dawsons were pretty keen on this brand of tobacco called Irish Cake. And whenever they'd have a rehearsal session, they'd smoke lots and lots and lots of it. So your clothes would reek for days of Irish cake after the event. So they called this little tune the Irish Cakewalk because it is it's their musical depiction of them walking down to the corner store to buy a packet of Irish cake. The Irish Cake space walk, not the Irish space cakewalk or the Irish space walk either.
Anything with Irish space walk.
Not Irish. It's not cakewalk. There's no cake.
There's no aliens.
No, we don't walk around. We just sit there. They could have called it anything, really. And frankly, they did.
You ready? So glad it's episode 10. I just can't deal with any more of your jokes.
I wish I knew those Irish space program jokes, but I don't. The only one I know is the Irish flashlight.
What's that one about?
Solar powered.
Mm.
The flashlight?
Flashlight.
So you can see in the dark.
Yeah. It's solar. Oh, right.
It takes a while, folks, but we get there in the end, don't we? Anyway. That's not-
I liked your walls joke better.
The walls joke. See, before we were talking about the telephone and how our generation hates people ringing up and our parents' generation must ring you up. And they must be answered. And I mentioned about how my landline, we don't answer the landline anymore. When the landline rings, my partner and I just look at each other and go, no, I'm not going to bother. Because every time we pick up the phone, it's like, hello, sir, how are you today? My name is William Smith, and I'm calling from the Windows PC Center today, sir. How are you? Sir, is Mr. Wall there? No? Is Mrs. Wall there? Are there any walls there? Then you'd better look out for your roof is falling down, young. Then they hang up the phone. I'm like, I'm not answering the phone just for that same joke every time. They're not even from the Windows PC Center.
I think it's great, the walls.
And I bet you his name's not William Smith.
Probably not.
It's probably Jonathan Nicholson or something.
We got a bit sidetracked. But let's play Irish Cakewalk.
Yes, we did. Oh, no.
Oh, we tried so hard. We're really sorry about that segue.
Irish Cakewalk. Right,
let's do it.
Yeah, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. How do we start this one?
One, two, three, four.
I like that tune.
Yeah, it's a good tune.
It's so simple and easy to get into, yeah.
And I like it because I was thinking, oh, I'll do it again and you'll just vomit. And we just naturally did it again. was great.
That was the Irish pork board. That was the Irish cakewalk by the Dawsons. I don't know when that would have been, mid 20th century, maybe a bit later. Who knows?
Don't know, mate.
Yeah,
it's anyone's guess.
Well, I suppose Steve Gadd would know, but yeah. We broke the Gadbot. The episode.
I'm sure he'll let us know.
What episode did we break the gap? And I don't want to ask him again because last time we asked him, he crashed his helicopter in the mountain and it was fire everywhere. And
it might have been episode 4 or 5, I think, actually. Yeah. Or somewhere around there.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Very good.
So we've done a lot of tunes by Alexander Lang throughout our podcasts. And I've been researching throughout the podcast for some hot facts that are in my sheets of paper here.
She's got the dossier.
So
how are you related to Alexander Lang? You keep saying you're related to Alexander Lang, but I don't see any resemblance.
Of course. Well, it's only through marriage.
Thank goodness for that, because to be honest, folks, having just had Australia Day yesterday, Alexander Lang, this great settler we look up to and put on a pedestal, he was a bit of a prick. He was a little bit racist and probably a horrible person. So thank good you're not related by blood.
You're really going to say that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, fine. That's fine.
Is it not the truth?
Well, yeah, there's definitely some history there that, we've got to acknowledge all of it.
Well, they say that you should always judge, historical figures not by our standards but by theirs. And if you think about how they were trying to build a civilization on, the core principles of Christianity, and that was their whole civilization's philosophical outlook. If you're judging by those standards of the contemporary time, he was a total bastard. Oh my God! Did you not read the Bible, you guys? Did you not read your own book? You're beating these Aboriginals over the head with. Did you not read it? Anyway, sorry. I got carried away. Australia Day. Wow. It was yesterday. Australia Day.
You might need to edit out some words.
Don't worry, I'll get it. I've got the sense of order. If I have any we can just bang bang shoot them out. So we just had Australia Day this week. It's a bit traumatic for those of us who are, how should we say it, woke.
Anyway, geez, look.
Go on, tell us how you're related to this.
I just wanted to put it out there. Look, but, it's just how it is. I mean, like, I didn't choose that.
No, you didn't. And fair enough. And look, it's
just how it is. I mean, like, it's almost, I just find it amusing that I have ended up playing a lot of his tunes and playing, the Tasmanian folk tunes all the time. Mm. But it's my great, great, great uncle. So, Bartholomew Reardon Jr. married Alexander Lang's daughter, Susan Lang. Mm. That's how I'm related to him.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
But not actually by blood.
No.
Yeah. Very good.
No. No, I did know that I wasn't related by blood. Mm. I was, But there you go.
So what happens with, I don't want to take all this glory away from you, Emily, but what quite often happens with these semi-historical community situations like this is there'll be a figure that we look to in the past, and inadvertently we tend to make folk heroes out of them when they're probably not. A good example of that is Robin Hood. The story we've got of Robin Hood is probably quite different. But if you judge him by the contemporary values of the time, killing the rich and selling their meat half price to the poor was actually a pretty decent thing to do, according to some of the true legends of Robin Hood. But now we see him as, almost Ned Kelly figure. Ned Kelly, another Robin Hood figure who was also probably not as great. I mean, he was pretty funny. Yeah. He was pretty good. Buckethead, we call him around here. G'day, bucko. How you go, mate? Anyway, I digress. So what I'm trying to say is that when I look towards the name Lang, I'm not really looking at Lang the celebrity. I'm looking at Lang as a focal point in history that we can look to and say that period there, that 20 years there is the Lang period. And there's also a lot of conjecture about whether the songs that he wrote were actually songs he wrote or songs that he pilfered.
Yes, there's a bit of that as well.
Being a great song pilferer myself, I kind of respect that aspect of him, but I just can't come at the racism in there.
Yeah.
And there's a terrible history about so Lang was here right in the middle of the Black War period, which is when the British in their infinite wisdom had somehow worked out that the local Pulawa people in Tasmania were somehow lesser in there, so therefore they should all be exterminated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened, folks.
Dark times in our history with that, so.
Lest we forget.
But, you know.
But the music didn't do nothing.
Yes.
The music is innocent.
Yeah, the tunes are there and it is part of how our music, you know, the Tasmanian heritage tunes sort of developed with definitely Lang's influence. Mm. You can't deny that because otherwise we wouldn't be here actually playing these tunes and
if it wasn't for Lang, we wouldn't be sitting here playing these tunes.
I know.
We'd still be sitting here.
I just mean like maybe his, you know, he could have, you know, influenced other composers at the time as well. And
look, for me, I'm a bit outspoken about this for sure. But for me, it's like
a little bit is an understatement. FYI.
But I think it's important that we don't throw the stuff in the bin, but we keep the truth, you know, we keep, you know, when we play these songs, we play them with joy, but we also remember.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yep.
History never repeats, tell myself before I go to sleep.
Shall we play the tune?
Please.
Thank you for sticking with us if you still are listening to us at this point.
We've had half the people who are celebrating Australia Day just throw the podcast out the oh, divisions, oh, so upset, oh, my sacred day. Oh.
But if you have stuck to us still, thank you. And here's another tune.
Yeah, you're the real ones. You can stay. You're the real ones. Yeah, we're just waiting for those guys to go. You're the ones we do the podcast for. I love you.
Oh my gosh. All right, ready?
Yep. For that was Alexander Lang's Mary Stirling's hornpipe. And that comes around about 1820s or so,
something like that.
Very early 19th century tune, yeah.
Well.
Yeah, so that was the Alexander Lang. We played a lot of Alexander Lang and we have a lot of Alexander Lang in the canon. And they're good tunes to play. They're fairly simple tunes and they have a rustic niceness to them, I suppose.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, we're going to move into now a tune that we played in our Christmas special.
Yes.
So
it's a funny thing. We did a Christmas special because I adore Christmas carols. I think they're wonderful.
Because you're such a chirpy guy.
I don't care much for the lyrics, but the tunes are great. Have you noticed that the most dangerous time to play Christmas carols is January, February?
Why?
I don't know why, but if you play, if you're new to Western civilization, here's a hot tip, right? Go out in the street and play a Christmas carol in January and see what happens. People are very emotionally disturbed by that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know what I think it is? Well, we've spoken about this on the Christmas thing. We spoke about the over-commercialization of these tunes and how they get, you know, pretty much, I don't know, destroyed.
Yeah.
By Muzak and all that sort of stuff, and the malls that play them incessantly, and so on and so forth. So I think what happens is we get this build up to Christmas Day, and everyone's really excited. We get together with the family on Christmas Day. We open our presents. We have an all out brawl. We get way too drunk. Everybody's in tears at the end, and then the songs, the Christmas carols, just linger in the background as sort of like some sort of antagonism.
Like a haunting.
Yeah, a haunting memory of that terrible traumatic event which we happen in Western civilization every Christmas Day. And that's why I think they hate them. So
also there's just a lot of really bad versions.
No, oh, there's a lot of bad versions.
There's a lot of bad versions. So that could also be why.
Those bad versions though, they must be super easy to make and pay really well.
Maybe we should do that.
I would love to do a bad Christmas album. Yeah.
I can only imagine it too.
I was considering doing another podcast, Drunken Uncle Carl Sings Your Favourite Christmas Carol. I won't do it now because there's too much swearing
please,
in it, but it's basically just a drunk bogan swearing in a karaoke machine over Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yep.
Yeah.
I could. Yeah, let's not give that a preview.
Next year, folks, next year. I'll send that to you by email privately from me to you.
It'll be even if you don't want it, we'll send it to you. Mm. So from especially that episode, we're actually not going to do one of the Christmas tunes. We're going to do one of the klezmer tunes we played, and it's called Mazel Tov. So it's kind of a – well, it's they play it for weddings. It's
they?
Into the bright. They. It's played – sorry, I didn't mean to say they.
They?
Well, they, like musicians.
I think you mean the Jews.
No, I didn't. It is a Jewish tune because it's clever. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a beautiful tune. And they're beautiful people.
Pull me up on they. I'm just wondering
why are you shying away from saying this is a Jewish song? This is a klezmer song.
I said klezmer. Okay, fine. Well,
you said klezmer. He was like, this is a klezmer song. He said it like that. This song is a klezmer song. And we're going to play it because they played it. But no, this is. So what have the Jews got to do with Tasmania? What is the connection with Jewish history and Tasmanian history? Well, the Jews were here with the first influx of settlers, and in Tasmania we have one of the oldest synagogues in the region, and it's still running today. It was built very early in the 18th century, and it's a very famous synagogue, and it's probably very well known if you're in the you know, if you've got a bit of Hebrew culture there or you're up with Hebrew sort of Jewish history there. So even though, and this is quite what often happens in Tasmania, the Anglo-Celtic dominant paradigm sort of swallows up everything around it. And you don't see the other additions like the Asian, you know, the Chinese or the Japanese. And there's a really strong Japanese community here. A lot of Japanese people come here and set up shop and love it. And people like Monts Matsumoto is one of the best banjo players around, and he's Japanese.
Mm.
But what I'm talking about, the Jews. See, when I look at her and say it like that.
Why can't you be normal?
Because the world's not normal.
That's
and
true.
If I was normal, I would be the only normal person in it, and that would be weird.
That would be weird. Can we just play the tune?
Yes.
Yep. Let's do that.
Mazel Tov means good on you. Thank you. That was Mazel Tov, a very famous klezmer song from the Jewish culture, who have had a long presence here and a contribution here in Tasmania since settlement, I think. Yeah, and we play that song because we love it. It was shown to Emily by a famous Melbourne klezmer violinist. What was his name?
Eddie.
Was it?
Oh, dude, I always forget his name and I feel so bad. But he's really nice.
Well,
hang on, I'm going to look it up right now because I should know this because this is actually embarrassing.
His name was unremarkable, but he was very nice. And he played excellent fiddle and he showed us that.
It's not Ed, it's Ernie. Sorry.
Ernie, I knew it was Ernie, yeah.
Oh, Ernie Gruner.
Yeah, Ernie Gruner. So he showed us that tune Eddie. And he brought that
one. I'm so sorry.
Emily.
Don't know why I thought Eddie. Ernie.
So Emily was so chuffed learning that tune. She brought it to us. She said, do you think we can learn this? And I just fell in love with it. And we play it nearly every time we can. But it's a beautiful tune there. That's called Mazel Tov. And that was from the Christmas episode, episode 7. Now, that brings us to episode 8. You'll notice, if you go over the archives, you'll discover during episode 8, I repeatedly called it episode 7. So if you listen to all the podcasts, you'll feel like episodes 8 is missing, like I did, but it's not. Episode 8 was episode 7, but not episode 7. Episode 7 was just episode Christmas 7, and episode 8 was actually episode 7, but it wasn't.
Yep.
It was episode 8. Episode 7 was episode 8, not episode 7. But
I think everyone's lost now. You do that deliberately.
It's very easy.
Easy. You get mixed up really easily.
It's very easy to what's what I'm looking for? Obfuscate what? Yourself.
What are we doing?
We're doing episode. Oh, I don't know.
I did that deliberately. I know what we're doing. We're going to play another tune.
Oh.
This is one by Ross Smither. This is called Dingo's Breakfast. And what was the saying for this again? Like, it's basically the name of the tune.
Is an Australian. What's the word? Australian idiom.
Slang. No, idiom.
Idiom, slang, yeah. Idiom, a phrase. And if you have a dingo's breakfast, what you do is you get up, you have a pee and a sniff around.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's your dingo's breakfast.
Yep. And that's it. Yeah, that's right.
But yeah.
It's a great tune and yeah, thanks, Ross.
So this tune was written 21st century, not that long ago, and Ross Smither is a well-known fiddle player from Tasmania, and he also gets up in the mainland, and many people know him from up there. He's had a bit of an involvement there with the National Folk Festival, I think, and so on. He's won some awards or something. Did he?
I don't know.
Did I imagine that? Anyway, he deserves an award. That's the point I'm trying to make. And this is written very much in that kind of old-timey Americana fiddle style. So it's a little bit different to the other tunes we play. And in the old-timey fiddle style, you normally play a style of banjo called clawhammer or frailing, and traditionally that's played without picks. Well, I play with picks, so I do that little fingery thing. If you play clawhammer, you're sort of playing a rhythm like this. Sort of. It's not really it, but because I've got picks on, it gives it a bit of a fake sound. So I'm going to be playing fake clawhammer during this, and yep. Emily's going to be playing absolute bona fide real violin.
I am.
Live.
Live. That's right. Let's do it.
Dingo's Breakfast, episode 8 by Ross Smither. Thank you. was Ross Mithard. I couldn't help myself but get in there and do a bit of Scruggs pick as well. As well. So you hear this. And then it'll be this. And that's why I kind of like playing that old-timey stuff with the Scruggs fiddle, with the Scruggs fingers. Even though, that's, do you know that's illegal on the mainland? If you do that at the folk festivals, you'll get kicked out.
Really?
Yeah. No. Yeah, no, it's true. I do it all the time.
That's why you got kicked out the mainland.
I said,
amongst other reasons that we can't go into now for that.
Well,
our lawyer said not
to
do
it. So let's, yeah. Jeez, she didn't want me to mention anything about the Jews or the race wars. But here she's bringing up all that sorted.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm terrible. Just as bad as you. But hanging around you too long. Actually, somebody told me the other day that I've been spending too much time with you because
Was it your husband?
No, it wasn't. It was a fellow other musician friend of mine because I said a saying that you always say, and then they were like, I think you've been hanging around
really?
Carl
what
too much.
Really? What was that?
I'm not telling you.
Did it involve the F word?
No, it didn't.
So it was one of the
No, well, it was just...
That narrows it down a bit though.
But it was just really funny because I was like, yeah, we're probably... Do you spend too much time together?
Yeah, well.
But that's okay. I mean, you're okay. You're fine.
Well, thank you very much.
No worries. That's the nicest thing you'll get from me.
Yeah, that'll do. That'll do. I'll take
that. That'll do.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So we're going to move into what we played in our 9th episode.
This was last week. It's fresh.
It's fresh. So it's one that Marjorie Gadd wrote and it's Hemiolis on Holiday. So we're just gonna jump into it.
So this was Hemiolis was the elf from Lord of the Rings who had a 3-day weekend in the, I think it was the first book. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah.
That was the joke I made in episode 9, you know.
We're just going to some Lord of the Rings.
Are you gonna do? Go on, do the Lord of the Rings, go.
Oh, it's the Hobbit one. Even watch Lord of the Rings, man. Or you
to
go,
be honest.
Yeah.
Mm.
That stuff.
Right.
You could tell I'm a bit of a Lord of the
Rings
fan.
Lord of the
Rings
nerd, yeah. Right. What no.
Yeah, I'm going to stop.
I played a lot of Dungeons & Dragons in my day. I know all about orcs and trolls and that, but I've never read Lord of the Rings and I've only seen parts of the movie.
Really?
But I have a 13th level paladin and a 17th level magic user.
Oh, my God. Look, I have all the Lord of the Rings. Maybe we should hang back and we'll just
what, watch all one. Of them?
Not all of them.
Is it like Cliff Notes or something? Or
maybe just send you notes. Mm. Do try to return jewellery. For a minute. All right.
I can imagine. Can you imagine Frodo trying to return the ring? This would be like, you know, well, I've got this ring and I just, may I see it? No! Yeah, sorry. No.
It just doesn't fit right.
It just doesn't fit. Can I have a look at it? So are you trying to return this ring or not? Yes, but I'm just throwing off the mountain. I don't care.
I lost the receipt, so I can't actually give you a refund. Fine then, I'll take it to a volcano then where I can melt it.
The obvious
anyway,
alternative, yeah.
That's what happens when I can't return things. I just go.
You just go up to the local volcano and piff it in and there you go.
Yep. All right.
Do you get any reimbursal from the volcano god or anything like that? No, nothing. Yeah, because the ring's not a virgin.
No.
Somehow. That's what I would presume.
Yep. Yeah. Anyway.
Hemiolis on Holiday is a song that was written by Marjorie Gadd. Marjorie Gadd is the partner of Steve Gadd. They do a lot of folk playing and originally set up the Heritage Fiddle Ensemble and have quite a lot of these tunes and old tunes that they haven't written and tunes that they have and so on and so forth. But they've been big pushers of folk music down here. And this tune was written when Steve and Marjorie were sequestered in a cabin during some inclement weather. And decided to entertain themselves. Oh, I'm just trying to upscale the vocabs here. What's wrong? Laughing.
Keep going.
Laughing like I'm some toff from the mainland. Anyway, these two fellas, they got stuck in. Well, they weren't fellas. It was a guy and a girl, so it was all right. They got stuck in this like hut, right? And it bloody, the weather was rotten. Anyway, they said, well, what are we going to do? So they wrote these tunes as a sort of test for themselves, and this is what came out.
Oh, wow.
There's more of that story in the other episodes.
Without the weird voices.
Oh, no, they've got the weird voices.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, look, let's just play the tune.
Right. This is in – hey, so I might actually
– you're going to cheat, aren't
I'm
you?
I'm going to cheat. So mm-hmm. by cheat – so Emily and I – actually, you've been spending too much time with me because you never used to think this. But I hate capos, and I find people that use capos, I consider them weak and ineffectual. However
– however, you're using a capo.
Yes.
So eat your words. Everyone's listening going, yeah, that's right. Emily, you tell him.
Yeah. So –
that's right.
Because I was like trained in – outside of – folk and bluegrass with a lot had a lot of training in jazz and so on and so forth. So there's constant key changes and going on and that sort of stuff, and you can't apply straight up bluegrass rolls to a lot of this stuff. You've got to play differently. So I had to learn all my just ordinary closed positions without the capo. But when you go to bluegrass sessions quite often to get around that changing of keys, they just whack a capo on. So what I've done is I've put my special banjo capo on, the second fret, and I have these little tiny little metal things that I can put the fifth string underneath. So I get on the second fret, I've got all these, and on my fifth string, I've got, and that.
Well done.
That's what's going on there, folks.
If so happy for you.
If you're watching this from home with your eyes closed.
Yep.
Because it's a podcast.
But fiddles, we're doing all the real work and we just, we don't have to.
Oh, here we go. Why don't you play your fiddle while you tell that sob story?
I will.
We do all the work. No, they do a lot of work. They do a fair amount of work for fiddle players.
Do a fair amount of work. All of it, mate.
But I would encourage any player of any fretted instrument to just try without the capo and, yeah, for a bit. Go back to it because it's a lot of fun to have it. But at the same time, don't neglect your close position chords.
That's right. Mm.
Hemiola's On Holiday.
Let's do it.
By Marjorie Gay.
One, two, three, four.
Got your little ending that's not written down there. Sorry.
That's all right. Just give you the look.
Yeah, you did.
I did. All right. So we're up to our 10th tune.
So our 10th tune, and as you know, this is our 10th podcast, so we don't have a 10th song for you. So what we're going to do is we're going to play all the songs we just played at the same time as our 10th tune. Oh, simultaneously. God.
Can you imagine trying to do one of the bars of each of the tunes?
We should actually, for the Heritage Fiddle Ensemble, we should do that one day. We should just get every bar and just paste it in a new sheet and then play it. And the first person who recognises what song it's from.
That's good. That'd be a good one. Hmm. Oh, that could be hard. We should try that one time as a challenge.
As a torture.
As a torture.
Yes, we should try that on them.
That'd be quite funny. Very hard to read.
What we're going to do, instead of doing that, that's a stupid idea, and we're not going to do that. What we're going to do is we're going to pick a song that means a lot to us.
It's just we really like playing it.
And apples. We like apples.
Yep.
Apples are healthy.
There was a clue.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
So, go on.
I'm just going to say we're going to do King Pippin's and
Uncle Affy's Tap.
Yes, and we don't need music for that, do we?
We don't even need to play. We'll just sit here in silence for 2 minutes, and you guys know these tunes so well, we'll get you to hum it along. Yeah, you got this podcast for free. It's the least you could do for us.
That's funny. We just sit in silence. Like, you can just hum along. Okay,
ready? One, two, three. Shh. We're kidding, folks. We're not really going to do that. So these two tunes, Uncle Effie's Tap and
King Pippin's.
King Pippin's. These come from this great tradition of the apple shed dancers down here. So the apple industry, we talk all about this. What this is from episode two, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
So we talk a little bit about that. We go through an extensive shortfalls in international apple trade during the 1920s to the 1930s, and we talk a little bit about how that affected the overall mercantile interest rates of the Tasmanian economy at the time, and affected the government administration of Ledgerfield and so on and so forth. So we go into great detail there. We go over the no, we don't. Idiot.
Idiot. Can you just stop talking?
So apples were really big in Tasmania. I mean, they were average size. I keep having to add that qualifier because when I say apples are really big, people get this weird idea that
we have really big apples.
Big apples. And they go, what's so big about your – "What's? Yeah, I want to see these big apples. How big do they get?" And we show them our apples and they're pretty underwhelmed. Yeah. The apple industry was pretty big in Tasmania in the 20th century. And what used to happen seasonally is the fruit pickers would come out and pick the apples. And then at the end of the apple picking season, they'd have a big cider party in the apple shed where they'd play these musics. And these were a couple of tunes that they played all the time. King Pippin's is actually an apple. King Pippin is a breed of apple.
Mm-hmm. But Uncle Effie's is from Cape Barron Islands. Oh. So this is another Cape Barron tune. So they're really too fun, and we just like to play them really fast and a bit crazy. So that's what we're going to do to finish off with.
Mm-hmm.
So King Pippin's will be first.
Right.
Just so you know. Yeah, you got it. All right.
Thanks very much for listening. We'll say goodbye after this song just so it's all nice and warm, but this will be our final song. Uncle Effie's Tap and King Pippin's Poker. That was King Pippin's Poker first, then Uncle Effie's Tap.
Yeah.
King Pippins was in D, Uncle Affy's was in G, and they were a couple of songs from the Appleshed Dancers put together. King Pippins was, not sure where that was from, but Uncle Affy's apparently was from the Flinders Island, Brown Brothers, string bands up there, Indigenous folks up there in Tassie. So I would like to say a very special thank you.
Thanks for listening. We've really enjoyed doing this podcast, and we really enjoyed mostly – no, it's been all positive feedback, and we know
– we know that one guy that wasn't, and he doesn't count.
Yeah, and we know that we have, you know, regular listeners, so it's really nice to know that it's been, you know, taken on so positively. Like, we weren't quite sure how this was going to go. And we've had fun doing it. So hopefully we'll be around for season two. But you know, we've got some other things we need to get finished in the pipeline.
Yeah. So season two might be a couple of months away whilst we finish off our second album. But we'll be back with better equipment. Hopefully, who knows what it will bring? Maybe we'll be able to go out and interview and play with some of the other great folk musicians.
I think that's what we would like to. I think that'd be
really what I would like to do.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
We can talk about them all we like. And nice we can say whatever we like about them, and there's nothing they can do about it. It's fantastic.
but it'd be nice to actually go.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
So just before we go, I'll also say that what I'll be doing, if you'd like to, if you've liked this podcast, we give it away freely, but if you'd like to contribute, or if you'd like some information, or if you'd like some of these tunes, sheet music, so you can go and play them, wherever you are in the world, whether you're in the Tasmanian Heritage Fiddle Ensemble, or whether you're stuck out in Antarctica, or if you're in Norway or anywhere else in the world, Africa, Zambeziwa or Formosa.
What are you trying to say?
You can give us a yell and say, "G'day, I've heard the podcast. Can I get can I get King Pippins or whatever? Have you got a copy of it?" And we'll send it off to you as a PDF.
Sure. Please ask us if any of these tunes you really enjoyed listening to and you want the music, we can send them to you. So, because we're all for sharing our music.
Yeah.
So, please let us know.
If you'd like to contribute to the podcast in a sort of material way, there's a couple of things you can do. You can go to Bandcamp and buy the first Wolf and Thorn album, which is about, I think, 10-15 bucks on Bandcamp. In the coming weeks, I'll be packaging up the acoustic songs we've done and putting them in a specific Bandcamp album too. So if you want to have a copy of those, just the MP3 files without all us shenanigans and really bad jokes and, you know.
Just want the good stuff, the tunes.
That'll be available on Bandcamp for a dollar or two. That's about it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Don't weep for us. We're already dead.
Oh, my Lord.
All right. Goodbye now.
Bye.
Bye.